Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
A very good afternoon to you again. Welcome. It's an interesting week. Like I said, broadcasting live from the Eastern Cape. Now, last week, the world marked World Prematurity Day on the 17th of November, a global day that shines a light on the smallest and most vulnerable among us, babies born too soon. But what does this really mean for parents? And joining us this afternoon to have this discussion is a member, or rather Wellbeings Africa Medical Advisory Panel member, who's a doula and lactation specialist, none other than Tara Williams. She is not new to the family. Tara, good afternoon and welcome back, my lovey.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me again. It's lovely to be here with you.
Sounding lovely and audible. You know how we went last time? We really struggled because technology can have the best of us at times. Oh man, welcome Tara. Now, to start off, let's talk about this. What is the significance of World Prematurity Day?
So World Prematurity Day, and it's even the month, so the month of November is actually, you know, Prematurity Awareness Month. And it's to raise a spotlight and create global awareness of prematurity, and that it's actually one of the leading causes of death in children under 5 worldwide. Sure. So it's really important to be able to educate people on it, because it's very common, you know, and 1 in 10 babies globally are born prematurely. So what this month and the day stands for is just to promote global awareness on the struggles that mothers face who have premature babies.
Very interesting, I must say, Tara, because you're kind of answering an argument a friend of mine made, you know, because I used to panic with my little ones because they were premature, born at 6 months. And when I was panicking because their weight was smaller and people would always judge me, they'd be like, oh, they're too small for this age. She said to me, friend, do not rush them, because up until the age of 5, you are going to see a couple of delays in their development as well. And I was like, 5 years? So when you said it's a cause of death for up to 5 years, I was like, oh, so this cuts across the board. It's not just, you know, physical growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it does affect them. And that's why you don't compare children, right? Mm. And especially more so if your baby's born prematurely. Even in terms of weight, like you say, a premature baby can sometimes even up to 2 or over 2 be a little bit smaller, because what we need to look at is actually their corrected age.
Yeah.
So they were born, if your baby was born at 6 months, which means that she still kind of had 3 months to go, right? Mm. So she's always 3 months behind developmentally. And that's just like a standardized thing, right?
Yeah.
But some babies are obviously a little bit more, depending on what happened with their case and the severity of the prematurity and why they were born premature in the first place.
Sure. So there's a lot of factors contributing to that, I see. Now, tell us, Tara, how common is premature birth, and what are some of the most common causes or risk factors?
So like I said, it's about 1 in 10 babies globally. And I mean, if you look at that factor, it is very, you know, it's really interesting, because if you look at 1 in 10, think about how many births we have. So in South Africa, I think the latest stats was around 3,800 mm-hmm. births a month across the country. So imagine if 1 in 10 of those babies are born prematurely. Sure. It really is, you know, a big deal.
Mm, but we don't think of it that much, hey?
Yes, exactly. You don't realize that it's such a big factor.
Yeah.
And then the drivers of it, you know, there's so many things that contribute to it. And I don't want people to think that it's only these things, right? Mm. But a lot of times it's hypertension, your preeclampsias or your eclampsias, and maybe I must just bring it down so that people can understand that is when your blood pressure spikes in pregnancy and it goes too high where it becomes dangerous for you and the baby. We also have diabetes that could affect it, infections, especially your UTIs. You know, many women don't think that they have a UTI in pregnancy. So sometimes they don't feel, you know, that they think that it's just growing pains or they think it's stretching pains. And then it ends up that it's actually, it was a UTI because you don't always have the burning feeling in your urine when you have a UTI. So often, you know, it's not well understood, right? So especially with women who don't do their antenatal checkups at the clinics and in the government sector, we have a lot of those situations where moms are not going for antenatal appointments. And then you can't pick up any problems and try to avoid them before.
Still one of the craziest thoughts for me, Tara, because unless you did not know that you're pregnant, because we are seeing a lot of ecliptic pregnancies of late, but why? Why would a parent risk their child's life like that? I know I'm pregnant, but I still won't go for my checkups. Like, how crazy can that be?
You know, and I think without judgment completely, because I work in the government sector and I can see and I can understand what parents are feeling. And a lot of it is they don't want to sit in long queues. They don't want to come very early in the morning and sit there for the whole day, which, you know what, sometimes we just have to take it one for the team, you know, and make sure that you and your baby are well. We also then now obviously have the controversy of what's going on with foreigners and that foreigners don't feel like they are able to go and seek help at a clinic. So that's a major fact recently that is happening. And then a lot of what we see is teenage moms who get pregnant and they don't want to go because of stigma, because of, you know, they don't want their parents to know. Or like you say, women in general, I feel, have become very disconnected to their bodies. And because they are disconnected, they're not even seeing the potential that they could be pregnant.
Of course. Oh, you're making a very valid point, actually, because that's something I've been asking myself a lot, to say, why now? Why is ecliptic pregnancy such a famous term and occurrence? So you're raising a very valid argument. We are quite disconnected with our bodies.
Absolutely. And I wish it were different, right? I wish we could all go back, because it will absolutely change even how we mother, even how we feel, you know, that intuition in our pregnancy that something may be wrong. And then you seek help for it. Do you get what I mean?
Absolutely.
But we've lost that connection because of trauma, because of stress. I think women are also under chronic stress, which is another factor, you know, that could cause, you know, preterm birth is really, really, really stressful situations, traumatic situations, that put women in that space. And it does lead to premature birth.
Yeah. Now, as you were mentioning, I was just thinking, you know, Tara, for me, it was definitely preeclampsia. And it's funny because a week before I gave birth, the only complaint my OB-GYN had was that the amniotic fluid is decreasing. So it was stressing her a little bit. And she was scheduled to go on a holiday a week later. She said to me, just to be safe and so I can have a good holiday, Luko, before I actually go on holiday on that day when I leave, I want to see you just for a few minutes and then I'll dash off to my holiday. I was like, cool, not a problem. And that week before, after I went to see her, my colleagues kept saying, you look very swollen. And I was like, am I? No, I'm just big. I mean, it's twins, you know, and I'm tired. I can feel it. But probably 3 days leading up to that, I could feel my tummy was almost as if it was sore and it was itchy. I just couldn't understand. And that morning I saw her, they did all the tests. And after she had checked the babies and she couldn't really see them, she looked at me and she said, are you okay? I said, no. Besides the fact that I'm really tired and my stomach really feels stretched out and sore. She said to me, are you sure you're okay? No headaches. I said, nothing. Otherwise, I'm just tired. I'm fed up with this. She said to me, okay, guess what? We've got to bail out. I was like, oh, when? She said, today. I looked at her, I was like, what do you mean today? She said, no, I'm picking up signs of preeclampsia. It's not looking good. And I feel I can't even take a few days off and leave you like this. They're better off outside than inside. And that afternoon, in fact, she said to me, if I could, let's go in now. I said, no, but she said, did you eat? I said, yes. She said, no, you'll be the last one in theater. But the sooner we bail out, the better. And indeed, that day, I had to give birth immediately.
Absolutely. And another factor of yours is also the multiples. So when you have multiples, so your twins, triplets, you know, we've even had quads.
Sure. Ones.
Can you imagine going home with four babies?
I'd die.
And I mean, you know, these are all factors that, you know, make prematurity more risky. So your multiple gestations is definitely riskier. And, you know, thank God you went when you did, because it could have ended a lot worse.
True. So, but tell me, speaking of that, Tara, many people actually assume that premature only means small baby. What are some lesser known challenges premature babies and their parents face?
So it's much more than just a small baby, right? Because what you must remember is that baby should have been growing inside, right? In the time that they came. And prematurity is even extended, in my opinion, right? And in a lot of medical opinion as well, is anything before 37 weeks, right, is a premature baby. And full term is actually only 39-40, because 37 and 38 is actually late preterm.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, so it's actually called that. So when women have babies before 37 weeks, and even in that 37, 38 week, they could still be tiny, right? They could still have a little bit more growth that they could have done, right?
Yes.
So in that time, they still needed to grow. So they still needed to develop. Brain development is a big one that happens now. Externally, right?
Yeah.
That should have happened internally. So there's a lot that still needs to happen in terms of brain development, in terms of their organ development, in terms of growth, in terms of learning how to feed. So the best thing that you can do for your baby, if your baby is premature, is actually to provide them with breast milk. Because breast milk helps with the development and the growth, so that it happens as it would have happened inside, but now is happening externally. Because the breast milk of a mum that has given birth to a preterm baby, its composition is actually different to that of a full-term baby. And that's how incredible a woman's body is.
Sure. Very interesting, I must say, Tara, because if you remember my story, that was a big challenge, the underdevelopment, and that particularly with my kids, it was intestinal. And it was weird because both of them got the NEC as a result. Meanwhile, we were looking at the fact that the weight was looking good.
Yes. The weight could be looking great. And I mean, there are cases where many times babies at, say they're born at 35 weeks, we've seen some even at 34 weeks, right?
Yeah.
They are clinically looking well. They are breathing well. They, you know, don't have any indicators that they need to be in an incubator, in the hospital, or, you know, staying in a neonatal ICU. So they're healthy, right? But then they battle with the feeding.
Yes.
But the feeding is important because they still need to grow. And when that process happens with a mom that goes home, even if it's your second baby, but it may be your first preterm baby, it's a very different journey.
Sure. This is really a tough one, I must say. Now, tell me, Tara, how has care for premature babies changed over the years? Do you think their outcomes, the outcomes are actually improving?
In certain sectors, yes. You know, and where we are using evidence-based education in terms of what we learn about preterm babies and how we do it, we can see that the outcomes are incredible, right? Where you see little 25 weekers, 26 weekers that actually grow up and they thrive, right? I think we mustn't forget that the physiological aspects make as much a difference as the medical aspects.
True, true.
So, for example, skin to skin. And I don't know how much skin to skin you did.
I never did it, unfortunately. I never did it because they were, remember, they were, I didn't see them the first night because I was out. And then after that, when I saw them the second day, they're already in the small incubators, and that was it. They never, the only, the first baby I held, I think she was already like 20, 22 days old.
And that is so sad, really, to me. That's the saddest thing of all, because there is so much evidence that shows us that skin to skin and a mother's chest is so healing to that baby.
Yeah.
So in our government institution, the moms are doing skin to skin with their babies, even if the baby is on oxygen and on CPAP. So CPAP is the large oxygen, but the nurses are able to facilitate skin to skin with the moms. So that they can still have that. So yes, they don't remain there with the babies, you know, once the, when the baby's still on oxygen and admitted. But once the baby grows and the baby's comfortable on room air, and the baby's then able to go to what we call in the government sector, the KMC unit, which is the kangaroo mother care. That means that now the baby is growing. So, and learning how to feed, and that's literally all we're doing there. So mom and baby is then admitted together, and they do skin to skin 24 hours a day.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to give credit to where it's due, Tara, now that you've mentioned that, because you know how we always just glorify private care. But can you see that something that seems insignificant yet so important was missed in what we would regard, hey, as the best, only to find out I could have had that opportunity because I desired it. In fact, when I was given my first baby, the sister, I think, was just being rebellious about it because I was like, I've never held my kids. I always just give them a finger. I've never held them. And I mean, it's weeks later, I really just desired to hold my baby in my hands. And she said, come on, man. She took the baby and she gave to me. And that was the first time I had my baby.
Absolutely. No, and that's the thing is, you know, we have to, like you say, give credit. So yes, you know, government institutions, you do stay longer, right? You do wait longer. But let me tell you, the care of a preterm baby, and I actually discussed this with another lady in our organization the other day, and she said to me, you know what, I would, if I ever had a preterm baby, I would want it to be at this government facility because of the care and how, because we work there, you know, in terms of breastfeeding support, that we know the care, you know, we know what is available that is not available in private. So, yeah, I think it's, and, you know, skin to skin is life-saving because that is where the baby naturally would have been, is with the mother.
Exactly.
Listening to the mother's heartbeat, you know, being with the maternal microbiome that basically grew during pregnancy for the baby. So now that baby's getting that microbiome by being on the mother's chest. So, you know, things like kangaroo mother care should be implemented in private as well, and not just limited to government facilities.
Of course. Now, tell me, this is definitely up your alley even more. What kind of support can a doula provide for parents who have a premature baby, especially in those uncertain early days?
So, unfortunately, also in the private sector, and, you know, the private sector might come at me because I'm
no, but we're facing reality. How many times do you guys take a slack?
Exactly. Look, in private sector, unless it's your client, right, that you've gotten from before birth and you were walking with the mom through the journey, there's actually very little support in a private sector at the hospital level that you can do for the mom. Right? Because in the private sector, doulas are still seen very much as, oh, you are only there for the birth. So people don't understand that doulas are actually there for postpartum as well, right? So doulas are there to facilitate bonding, to help the mom with the emotional factors that she's dealing with. So if you can imagine, and I mean, you can totally relate to having all these emotions when your babies are born preterm, right? So you need someone to hold your hand. And yes, your family can do that. But sometimes I find with the women that we support, sometimes you just need someone external. You need someone that you can vent to, that you can talk to, and someone that also has a little bit of knowledge in terms of the medical side that you can say, well, they said this. You know, can you explain this to me? And if the doula doesn't know, she can find out, right? And that's why it's important also to ask your doula. Say, for example, you are a mom with multiples, or you are a mom that has risk factors for preterm birth, and you're now selecting a doula. Select a doula that has experience in that area.
Now,
So she is able to understand the process, you know?
yeah, that's true. Sure. And as needed, as you're speaking, I'm actually thinking, Tara, as much as our families support us, usually there is a lot that they just don't get. It's almost as if you're not the first one. I've been through this. I know of somebody else. But really, I can imagine you need somebody, a professional person who can just help you navigate it. Because oftentimes people want to tell you about their experiences, but I can imagine that you're like, look, it's normal. This is what happens. This is what you can try. Versus, listen, Luko, I've been there. Everybody else has been there. It's not new to you. And that's the difference in the type of support you can generally get from just a regular family member, versus a professional.
Exactly. And also, you know, people, I don't want to say that they have bad intentions, right? The intention is there. And coming home with a preterm baby, Luko, is also different to coming home with a full-term baby. And there are so many myths, right? And so many people that can spread the wrong sort of information. And that could lead to death. Because, you know, and it reminds me of a video that I saw this week, and it's such a triggering video for me on TikTok of a mom that is feeding her 2-week-old baby cereal, right?
I
And
said that so loud.
the people on that comment, so she had then 2,000 comments, right? Majority of the people are giving the correct advice to say that you shouldn't be feeding porridge at 2 weeks old, right? You shouldn't be doing this. This is not good for the gut. But then there are so many other women who are saying, oh, women who are judging, you know, you were fed that when you were a baby and you survived. And this is very risky. So if there's any mother that is listening to this with preterm babies, your baby is different to any other baby.
Thank you so
And
much.
if you go and you give your baby cereal, if because your baby's now smaller, like you said, you know, your baby's always smaller than the other babies. Now you go and you give your baby cereal because you want to force weight on this baby. You are actually causing more harm than good, and this can lead to death. This can lead to gut problems where we've seen, you know, we've worked with babies who is not able to, even then at 6 or 8 or 9 months, able to digest food because of the problems that the cereal caused in the early weeks of life.
Sure,
So,
that's hectic.
yeah. It really is. And that's why I say the myths, you know, around your baby is small when they're premature and they need this and they need that, just validate the information that you are getting.
You're actually reminding me, you know, I had a huge conflict with my mom just after I took them home. Because remember, my mom's an African mom and she has all these meds that she wants them to take. Fortunately, Dr. Sukwadi had said to me, look, you need to understand that your kids are not just normal kids. You had a struggle with their gut, so I do not fiddle with it. So I would fight with my mom a lot until I told a doctor who was holding for their pediatrician. And she said to me, I fight with my mom all the time because unfortunately she wants me to use all these things and I'm not ready because I'm fearful of what could happen to them. That day she said to me, look, your kids are not normal kids. Please bring your mom in. She needs to have a chat with the pediatrician because she needs to understand. And what counted against me was the fact that my twin brother and I were also quite premature. So to her, it was almost as if, look, I've done this myself before. Prematures are not new to me. But she didn't understand also that, one, they were premature, but two, their condition was intestinal. So you just can't risk with them.
Yes, yes. And also, Luko, even if someone else had a preterm baby and they did that and their baby was okay, your baby is different.
Exactly, exactly.
Because we can all do the same thing, right? But some babies just don't react very well to it than others.
Sure.
You know?
I love this conversation.
The risk is so much higher. And that's why I say when we are also connected to our intuition as a mother, you know, you will stand up for your child. But we are, you know, and a mother is so susceptible and vulnerable in this prematurity time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because literally she gives birth to this preterm baby. She has never imagined that this baby is going to be so small, right? And she stands and she looks at this baby. And most common what I hear from moms is, this baby is so small. I don't think that this baby is going to make it because how is such a small baby going to make it, right? And that is where the doula can provide such deep emotional support.
In fact,
because you need someone to hold your hand through that.
I was actually just about to ask you, Tara, because it's really an overwhelming moment, I know. So what emotional impact do you see most often in these parents?
A lot of fear. There is a lot of fear because you don't know what to expect. And also every day in the neonatal ICU is different, you know, based on weight. You know, baby is not gaining today, but tomorrow baby's gaining. Or this week was a good week and baby gained very well, baby did well, baby was progressing. But literally 2 days' time, baby looks like they're declining again. So it's literally an up and down pattern that doesn't always look linear. It's not always that it gets worse before it gets better, you know, or that it's going to go in the straight pattern and just be, you know, be what it is. It's really an up and down journey. It is a roller coaster. So nothing is the same every day, and women battle. And you can understand, right? So now in the government sector, besides the fact that you are going through this roller coaster, you are now also having to navigate transport money to get to your baby.
Oh, it's a lot. It's a lot.
You know, it's a lot. And then you have to, you know, remember preterm moms also, like I said to you, the breast milk is important, right? So we're trying to get the milk to the baby. So now you are pumping 2 to 3 hourly while you are battling with your transport money, while you are battling with your emotions, while you're having to come see this tiny baby every day. It really is a lot. And we have to understand that this is the journey moms go through. So not to turn a blind eye, but to open up avenues for support.
But tell me also, Tara, how can families look after their mental health while their baby is still in hospital? Because like you're saying, it is draining. It really is.
Absolutely. So I think the best you can do is to use mindfulness techniques as well in order to just calm yourself, right? First of all. Second of all, you need to find support, right? Mm. Whether it's a support group, whether it's NGOs, you know, I myself have an NGO, 1,000 Days of Grace Foundation, and we walk with moms through this journey. And that's why we at the government facilities is because these moms need it, right?
Wow.
You know, find an organization, find support systems, find counseling spaces, you know, even if it's like your church or, you know, SADAG, so, or any of these online spaces where you can get counseling. Because this is another thing, right? Women feel like they should be strong. And sometimes you can't be strong every day. Because you end up just holding it all in, and it ends up just becoming worse and worse and worse over time.
Sure.
So finding that support is important.
So tell me, Tara, are there any misconceptions that we need to clear up about prematurity?
Beyond what we discussed, I think other misconceptions is that it is only the mother. You know, it is the mother's fault. Because, again, we as women, everything is our fault.
Yeah.
Right? You blame yourself for everything, and you try and find reasons of what you did or what you didn't do, right? And yes, sometimes there are things that you could have done better. So, for example, if a woman is smoking and using alcohol and doing drugs, you know, while she is pregnant, those things do affect the baby and can lead to prematurity. So if you're then going through your life and saying that, you know, I shouldn't have drank, I shouldn't have smoked, I shouldn't have done this. But there's some cases where it's nothing that you could or could not have done.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you, Luco, you did not want to have preeclampsia.
Of course.
You know, you did not expect to have it. It's not that necessarily that your lifestyle choices created that. You had a multiple gestation, and that meant that you did have higher chances of getting it. And then you had it. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In cases where, you know, there is actually nothing that you could have done, and even if you could have made a different choice, right?
Yeah.
So even if there is something that you could have done, so for example, not having you, if you didn't drink or if you didn't smoke or all of those other things, you now have a chance to redo that because that's the joy of a new day, is that you now have another day that God has granted you to make a difference or to make a new choice. So, you know, in most circumstances, it may not be the mother and it may not be something that you could or couldn't have done. But if it is, you also still have the chance to change your life for the future.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love it. Now, what message would you like to share with parents who have or had a baby prematurely?
That you are a warrior just like your baby. You know, that you have walked such a long journey. And for some women, you know, the journey ended in a neonatal death, you know, but we are here for you. And I think that there is support. There is places that can hold you through whatever it is you experience. And if you come out on the other side, you're always going to come out for the better.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Tara. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Really appreciate this. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but really insightful, I must say. And I'm glad. I mean, even your last words, you definitely spoke to me. I'm glad that we could speak about this.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure being with you, Luco. Hopefully my voice is fully back to normal the next time we speak.
Sounded perfect. Don't worry. God bless.
We are here 24 hours a day with the message of hope, faith, and love
on 657 AM.
Do you need prayer? Radio Pulpit, in collaboration with Need Prayer, is ready to stand in prayer with you. Contact us today with your prayer request at 012-334-1222 or WhatsApp us on 067-429-7564. You can also visit us on radiopulpit.co.za for your online prayer request. We will faithfully pray with you.
Tune in to Radio Pulpit on 657 AM for reliable Christian talk radio at its best. Find your daily dose of Christ-centered motivation and encouragement on Radio Pulpit 657. Download our app now. Tune in to radiopulpit.co.za or find us on DSTV Audio 882 and OpenView 607. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion for more than 40 years, brings a relevant moral alternative to 400,000 listeners in a variety of South African languages. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and download our podcasts today.
You and 657 AM and life, a winning team on the road to eternity.